Merry Christmas, you filthy animal. And a Happy New Year.
By the way, congratulate me this Christmas. I'm going for it. No antidepressants.
Somebody ought to teach that little humbug some Christmas spirit.
I could feel the Christmas noose beginning to tighten. Maybe what happened next was inevitable.
Ralphie, what would you like for Christmas?
Horrified, I heard myself blurted out.
I want an official Red Ryder carbine action 200 yard range ball air rifle.
Ooh. No. Shoot your eye out.
Now, what do you call this, Edith, huh?
That was a Christmas present.
What fathead has spent any money on a thing like that?
From your mother.
I must find some way to keep Christmas from coming.
That's what Christmas is all about, Charlie Brown.
The following podcast is brought to you by the book Newfie EVP, Talking with the Dead Nuclear. Visit Amazon.ca today and get your free sample of the best-selling ebook. And now, on with the show.
The news had come out in the First World War. The Bloody Red Baron was flying once more. The Allied command ignored all of its men.
Greetings from the oldest city in North America. I'm your host, John Mallard, bringing you the best in East Coast esoterica. You, my friend, have stumbled upon the Odd to Newfoundland Paranormal Podcast.
Hello out there in paranormal land. Merry Christmas, Happy Kwanzaa, Joyous Hanukkah, Happy Festivus, or where I come from, Merry Christmas, boys. Welcome to the Odd to Newfoundland Paranormal Podcast's Christmas special. Man. Well, first and foremost, there's only one person I know on this planet who's a bigger Christmas sook than I am, and that's my dear father, Donald Mallard. Dad, I made sure Snoopy's Christmas Carol was the first thing you heard tonight, and I just want to say every day with you is a gift, man. A very Merry Christmas to my wife Stephanie, and of course my beloved daughter Faith, whose very name is what this season is all about. Ladies and gentlemen, the Christmas special has arrived. You know, it's been a few weeks since I had a chance to really record anything, and I'm just so excited to be able to bring you guys a guest of the caliber of Dale Jarvis, someone who, in my opinion, truly represents the paranormal here in Newfoundland. But before we can get into our interview and have a creepy little Christmas with Dale, I gotta bring you guys the paranormal news. You know, there's no telling what people will do, especially in the automotive industry. You know, recently and over the last 10 years or so, we really have been looking into different types of fuels for cars. You know, in particular, electric car kind of surged, pardon the pun, and then burned out, of course. But you know what? There's one kind of surge that I want no part of. This new 40-seat bio bus that runs on human waste. Now, but I gotta throw this out there. You guys gotta hear this one. The UK has launched a new type of environmentally friendly bus that runs exclusively on waste products. The humorously nicknamed Poo Bus runs on biomethane gas created through the processing of rotten food and human waste. And yes, for anybody listening to podcasts, I had to actually edit this part 5 times because every time I say Poo Bus, I just start to laugh. It can travel up to 186 miles on a single tank of fuel. So, single tank of fuel, is that like my tank or their anyway. And is set to carry passengers between Bath and Bristol Airport. Bath and Bristol. Yeah, you're probably going to need a bath after being on this bus. The gas, which is produced at the Bristol Sewage Treatment Works, also produces far fewer emissions than traditional fuel. Now, gas-powered vehicles have an important role to play in improving air quality in UK cities. But the biobus goes further than that and is actually powered by people living in the local area, including quite possibly those on the bus itself, said Janico, General Manager Mohammed Sadiq. The bus service is expected to transport up to 10,000 passengers each year, while the treatment plant itself is producing enough biomethane to power an additional 8,300 homes. So here's the joke I gotta say right now for all my friends here in Newfoundland. We know there's gonna be a lot of power outages coming this year. I mean, we're all gonna go to the bathroom anyway. Is there any way we could power, you know, all of our electronics and our refrigerators and all that stuff with, you know, good old-fashioned butt wattage? Anybody? Didn't think that was funny? Ah, okay. You know, here in Newfoundland, power outages last year just about decimated us. I mean, we were just about ready to tear our neighbor's own heads off because basically, you know, we're just so used to having that luxury of having electricity. And, you know, when people like Newfoundland Hydro and whatnot look at us and say, you know what, we're not going to have constant energy flow this winter. Oh, wouldn't it be great if we can all just power our stuff, like our TVs and everything that with one of God's greatest gifts, poo. Anyway, I don't care what's the matter with poo. It's time to get on with this crap show. Well, I kind of wish I was in Loch Ness right now because, you know, this time of year is all about having old friends drop by. But man, oh man, recently Loch Ness has seen a spat of monster sightings like you wouldn't believe. A recent increase in Loch Ness monster reports has been attributed to debris from a nearby forest. After 18 months of no sightings at all, there has been a sudden and unexpected increase in the number of people reporting encounters with the famous lake monster over the last few weeks. Most of them, including that of Richard Collis, who filmed a dark object protruding from the water earlier this month, have described witnessing a long, thin, serpent-like head and neck rising up from the murky depths of the loch. While these sightings might seem like definitive evidence that something strange is going on, it just so happens that this latest wave of reports coincides exactly with an increase in the amount of logs and other debris being washed into the loch from nearby Urquhart Bay Wood. Large amounts of wood flows out of the woodland through the two winding rivers that flow into Loch Ness each year, peaking when water is high in late autumn and spring, said the spokesman from the Woodland Trust Conservation Charity. I think that some of that debris explains the long, thin, sometimes stick-like shape seen. The Urquhart Bay area has in fact described as a Nessie spawning ground due to the sheer number of monster-shaped objects that end up in the water there. In other words, yeah, looks like they kind of figured out why all these sightings were coming to be. And let's be honest, if Nessie really was going to hang out, do you really think he's going to hang out at Loch Ness? I mean, the place is not that nice. Don't get me wrong, it's a beautiful place for pictures, but like, if I was an aquatic animal and I was really wanting to spend some time. Right now, I'd probably be going south. I'd probably be heading towards, Florida, somewhere nice and warm, so I can roast my chestnuts by an open fire. Well, we all heard of Black Christmas, you know? This horrible, horrible time of year. But let's be honest with ourselves. It's only horrible because some people don't understand the idea of going out and getting your shopping done a month before Christmas, such as I. So, I will now replace Black Friday with another Black Devil, so to speak, because finally, a rare and elusive species of deep-sea fish has been captured on camera off the coast of California by the name Black Sea Devil. With its pitch-black skin, a mouthful of razor-sharp teeth, and a face that wouldn't look amiss in a horror movie, the appropriately named Black Sea Devil is rarely seen despite its distinctive appearance. Typically found in temperate waters, the fish lures in its prey using a unique, luminescent fishing pole that dangles above its head. In other words, this fish has its own Christmas lights attached. If you ever seen one of these things in the wild, you'll be very lucky. Let me tell you why. This research team in Monterey Bay has managed to capture this bizarre species on film for the first time. And he says, we've been diving out here in the Monterey Canyon regularly for 25 years, and we've only seen three. So these anglerfish are nowhere near as popular, so to speak, as Christmas lights. We've been driving out here in the Monterey Canyon regularly for 25 years, and we've seen three, said MBARI senior scientist Bruce Robinson. The team even managed to catch the creature for further study. However, it isn't clear how long it will survive. Now, the reason why I chose this as a Christmas bit of news is because of the light that glows on its head. But, you know, they really do a really good job on YouTube explaining what this thing actually looks like and does. So I'm just going to throw this on here for you guys to take a little listen to. Okay, enjoy.
We believe that this is the first video footage ever made of this species, alive and at depth. Anglers have a remarkable apparatus on their heads, a fishing pole with a luminous lure at the tip, which they use to attract their prey. In the darkness of deep water, they flash the light to attract prey and draw them near the angler's mouth. When a fish or squid swims up, it is quickly inhaled by the angler's huge mouth and trapped by its long, sharp teeth. Given the shape of this angler's body, it's pretty clearly not designed for speed. Instead, these are ambush predators, lurking in the darkness to grab an unwary meal. Another thing we can tell from the shape of the body is that this is a female. In this species, the males are much smaller, and they lack the fishing pole and lure. Males are ill-equipped for feeding, and their sole responsibility appears to be to find a female and mate with her.
Now, I can't help but totally 100% agree. I would love for my sole responsibility to be to, you know, find a mate, because I hate cooking. So there you got it. A little fishy from the deep sea that actually has a little bit of Christmas spirit attached to its head. Good Lord. Well, just goes to show, you know, it just goes to show you, though, maybe cryptozoology isn't that far-fetched. You know, we are looking for these strange animals and creatures and cryptids out there, yet something that we know exists that we have on the fossil record and we have bodies of, we have so hard a time finding. Only three have ever been documented by that particular team. So, to me, a story like that makes me wonder what else is out in our world that we don't know about. What else is out there to be discovered? Well, I'll tell you what. I nearly had a conniption when I discovered this. You know, Denmark is pretty awesome. It's even better if you're a troll. This next story, it just shocked me. So I can't wait to tell you guys about this one. This is definitely odd to Newfoundland. Denmark assigns $428,000 to research trolls? The money will go towards funding a study into the impact of troll mythology on the island of Bornholm. Trolls are a staple part of the myths and legends of the Scandinavian folklore, and now a researcher exploring the impact of these stories on the local environment has been awarded a sizable research grant to expand on his studies. In particular, the project will focus on the enigmatic island of Bornholm in the Baltic Sea, where tales of a troll by the name of Krollboll have been told for years. Researcher Lars Christian Krofag Romer, who is the recipient of the funds, is no stranger to investigating unconventional subjects, having previously studied the topic of ghosts for 2 years. The organization responsible for awarding the money Denmark's Council of Independent Research, or the DFF, has defended the decision despite skepticism over the value of such a study. At DFF, we believe that humanistic research should be funded on equal footing with all other research areas, and we actually support that area more than we support societal research, said Chairman Peter Munk Christensen. Now, what he basically said is that all areas of study are important. None are more important than the other. Wow. I should move to Denmark because, man, I'm telling you, I have done nothing but spend money as a paranormal investigator. And I would love to sink my hands into a couple of those almost $500,000 to look for signs of life, be they troll or not, in Denmark. Now, speaking of trolls, speaking of lads, so to speak, you know, there's one Yuletide tradition, and we're going to switch it to a Christmas gear now, of these strange little beings. Their names are the Yule Lads, or Yulemen, which is Icelandic, are figures from Icelandic folklore who in modern times have become the Icelandic version of Santa Claus. Their number has varied throughout the ages, but currently they are considered to be 13. They put rewards or punishments into shoes placed by children in windowsills during the last 13 nights before Christmas Eve. Every night, one Yuletide lad visits each child, leaving gifts of rotting potatoes, depending on the child's behavior throughout the year. So either a gift or a rotting potato. Wow. This is definitely getting odd. Okay, let's keep going. The Yule Lads originate from Icelandic folklore. Early on in their number, depictions vary greatly depending on location, with each individual lad ranging from mere pranksters to homicidal monsters who eat children. Oh my god. The Yule Lads were originally portrayed as being mischievous or even criminal pranksters who would steal from or in other way harass the population. At the time, mostly rural farmers. They all had descriptive names that conveyed their modus operandi. And I'm going to go ahead, and since it's Christmas, so to speak, here on the Odd the Newfoundland Paranormal Podcast, I'm not only going to butcher the Icelandic name, I'm also going to give you the English translation and its description, so we can all have ourselves a little Yule Lad laugh here, okay? Okay. And, oh, this is going to be horrible. Okay, here I go. The first Icelandic Yule Lad name is Stekkjarstaur. The English translation is Sheep Coat Clod. His description is, he harasses sheep, but is impaired by his stiff peg legs. The next lad is Jilla Jaguar, which translates to Gully Gawk. He hides in gullies, waiting for an opportunity to sneak into the cow shed and steal milk. The cow shed. I'm thinking it must be some kind of burn. Okay. Next Icelandic Yule Lad's name, who I'm going to butcher, the Stúfur. English translation, stubby. The abnormally short Yule Lad steals pans to eat the crust left on them. Wow, that's a pretty limited diet. He only eats crust? Wow, okay. Next lad, I don't even know what that letter is, so I'm going to try it, okay? Pervorloskulir. The English translation is spoon licker. He's my favorite, okay? He steals pavor, a type of wooden spoon with a long handle, or a pavara, to lick. This is extremely... He is extremely thin due to malnutrition. Like... Wow, okay. The next one is patakeskafil. Pots Graper is his English name. He steals leftovers from pots. Then there's Askaleskaskir. He's bowl licker. He hides under beds waiting for someone to put down their asker, which is a type of bowl with a lid used instead of dishes, which he then steals. I mean, because you know you would. Then we have Hyrroskylir, or door slammer. He likes to slam doors, especially during the night. Man, these Yule lads are little jerks. Really? These guys are jerks. How can anybody like these things? Okay, next one. Skygrimmer, or Skyr Gobbler. Yule lad with an affinity for Skyr. And for anybody who doesn't know, I might be pronouncing it wrong. I think it might be Skyr or Skyr. But it's just actually a type of really healthy yogurt. Next one is Junakrekir, or Sausage Swiper. What? Okay. Okay, so... Like, these are starting to get a bit perverted now. Sasha Soiber would hide in the rafters and snatch snatch sausages that were being smoked. Snatch sausages that were being smoked. Wow, that's a tongue twister. Next lad, Glugagagir, or window peeper. A voyeur who would look through windows in search of things to steal. Next one is Gatepifer, or doorway sniffer. Has an abnormally large nose and an acute sense of smell, which he uses to locate Labrafrenol. I have no idea what it is. We're just going to move on. Then we have Ket Croaker, or meat hook. He uses a hook to steal meat. Pretty straightforward. And we have Kersenecker, or candle stealer. He follows children in order to steal their candles, which in those days were made of tallow and thus edible. So there you have it. 13 Yule lads, I believe it is. 13 Yule lads. And they all seem like they're jerks to me. Oh my God. Like, I do not want this tradition for my kid. For my kid. She makes enough mess for me to clean up. My goodness gracious. Whoa, what can I say though? It's a pretty awesome tradition. It's definitely odd. But you know what? When it comes to strange Christmas traditions, there is nothing that can possibly touch the craziest one of them all. Ladies and gentlemen, here to top off my list as the weirdest and most odd to Newfoundland Christmas-related story I could possibly find. Who other than the Christmas devil himself, but Krampus, gets to end this year? Krampus is the dark companion of St. Nicholas, the traditional European winter gift bringer who rewards good children each year on December 6th. The kindly old saint leaves the task of punishing bad children to a hell-bound counterpart known by many names across the continent. Nechtruprecht, Serta, Perchten, Black Peter, Schmaltzy, Pelsnickel, Kloboff, and of course, Krampus. Usually seen as a classic devil with horns, cloven hooves, and monstrous tongue, but can also be spotted as a sinister gentleman dressed in black or hairy man-beast. Krampus punishes the naughty children, swatting them with switches and rusty chains before dragging them in baskets to a fiery place below. Huh, doesn't it just warm your Christmas heart? Now, a little bit of background on Krampus Night, or what they call Krampschnacht. Krampus is celebrated on Krampus Night, which takes place on the eve of St. Nicholas Day. In Austria, northern Italy, and other parts of Europe, partygoers masquerade as devils, wild men, and witches to participate in Krampusballoff, or the Krampus Run. Intoxicated and bearing torches, costumed devils caper and carouse through the streets, terrifying child and adult alike. Krampusnacht is increasingly being celebrated in other parts of Europe, such as Finland, France, as well as in many American cities. So, there you have it. This beast, okay, will hunt your children down and drag them away to hell. Beat them with rusty chains. And here I thought, you know, the occasional Scrooge story with ghosts and it was kind of creepy. And this just takes the cake. Man, oh man, this has probably been the most fun news I ever had. Okay. From poo buses to Loch Ness Monster being debunked, the Black Sea Devils, to Denmark forking out way too much money for troll investigations, Yule Lads and Krampus, every one of these stories have been odd to Newfoundland.
Now time for tonight's special guest.
Don't seem like Christmas if the mummers are not here. Granny would say as she'd knit in her chair. Things have gone modern, and I suppose that's the cause. Christmas is not like it was.
Get him over there!
Mark, what's the noise out by the porch door? Granny, tis mummers, there's 20 or more. Her old withered face brightens up with a grin. Any mummers, nice mummers, loud in. Come in, lovely mummers, don't bother the snow. We can wipe up the water, sure, after you go. Sit, if you can, or on some mummer's knee. Let's see if we know who you be. There's big ones and small ones and tall ones and thin. Boys dressed as women and girls dressed as men. Humps on their backs and mitts on their feet. My blessed, we'll die with the heat. There's only one there that I think that I know. That tall fella standing o'er alongside the stove. He's shaking his fist for to make me not tell. Must be Willie from out on the hill. Now that one's a stranger if there ever was one. With his underwear stuffed and his trapdoor undone. Is he wearing his mother's big party till bright? I knows, but I'm not gonna say. Don't suppose you find mummers would turn down a drop. No homebrew or elky, whatever you got. Not the one with these rubber boots on the wrong feet. He's enough for to do him all week. Suppose you can dance, yes, they all nod their heads. They've been tapping their feet ever since they came in. Now that the drinks have been all passed around, the mummers are planking her down. Be careful the lamp and hold on to the stove. Don't swing granny hard, cause you know that she's old. No need for to care how you buckles the floor, cause the mummers have danced here before. My God, how hot is it? We'd better go. I allow we'll all get the devil's own cold. Good night and good Christmas, mummers, me dears. Please God, we will see you next year. Good night and good Christmas, mummers, me dears. Please God, we will see you next year.
All right, guys, welcome back to the Odd the Newfoundland Paranormal Podcast. My guest tonight, the Intangible Cultural Heritage Development Officer for the Heritage Foundation of Newfoundland and Labrador, safeguarding traditional culture across our province. The only full-time, provincially funded folklorist in Canada. He holds a Bachelor of Science in Anthropology and Archaeology from Trent University and holds a Master of Arts in Folklore from Memorial University. He's the proprietor of something I absolutely love, which is the St. John's Haunted Hike Ghost Tour. He is also a mummering enthusiast as one of the founding members of the Mummers Festival in St. John's. He is a published author. Many of his books include The Golden Leg, Canadian Ghost Stories Volume 2, Haunted Shores, Haunted Waters, and my personal favorite, Wonderful Strange. A champion for the paranormal here in Newfoundland. Ladies and gentlemen, we are here to have a creepy little Christmas with him. Mr. Dale Jarvis, how are you tonight?
I'm very good. Thank you.
I'm very glad to have you on. You know, I have been talking to many people in Newfoundland, and your name always comes up over and over.
Is that a good thing or a bad thing?
Dale, it means you're doing all the right things, my man. And, you know, I've recently tried my best to get in touch with as many of my heroes. And, you know, you're living, breathing proof that, as a fellow author, I know the trials and tribulations, by the way, you're living, breathing proof that dreams do come true, and hence the name Paranormal always comes around when Mr. Dale Jarvis is in town.
Yeah, awesome.
Dale, a creepy Christmas to you.
Thank you.
We're recording a little tiny bit before Christmas. It's actually November as we speak now, but we're going to hopefully have this out the first week of December.
Great.
I do have some quick questions for you, man, and I know there's a lot of fans out there who are interested, so I got to ask it, you know. I've read a lot of your books, and I've read a lot of your articles and the Telegram and stuff like that as well. But, you know, I've never really knew. What got you into the paranormal, Mr. Jarvis?
You know, it's funny. People ask me that all the time, and it's just something that I've always been interested in. You know, even when I was a little kid, it was something that I was drawn to in some way. You know, I always loved kind of mystery. You know, I love magic and mystery and fantasy, and I was a voracious reader when I was a kid. And I can remember being not terribly old and going to the public library, and there were a series of books that were presented by Alfred Hitchcock. Like, they were like horror stories for kids. And I remember taking those out of the library and taking them home and absolutely loving that material. So it's something that's kind of been with me for as long as I can remember.
That's great, Dale. And, you know, we always have that part of us, or one little thing in our life, so to speak, that, shall we say, things blossom for the love of these things. And you know, one of my biggest things about the paranormal is I believe you do have to have a brush with the paranormal to truly believe in a lot of it. And that's definitely a question I always wanted to ask Dale Jarvis. You know, here's a guy who really is, I like to use the word archivist for ghosts. And here, yeah. I am, a paranormal investigator. Dude, have you ever had an actual encounter, any kind of brush at all with the paranormal?
You know, that's one of the most popular questions that people ask me, you know, about my own personal experiences. And I am so much more of a story collector than I am a ghost hunter. You know, like I leave the paranormal investigation stuff to the people that kind of know that inside and out. And I'm really interested in the legends, the myths, the old folklore, that kind of stuff. So I'm not going out and seeking out paranormal activity in the way that some other people who are engaged in this stuff are. But having said that, I live in an old house in St. John's, and the house has several ghost stories associated with it. And I've had a couple odd things happen in the house. I've never seen really, you know, what you would call an apparition or a spirit, but definitely weird things happen in this old house. So I, in my heart, I'm actually a bit of a skeptic, but an open-minded skeptic, and I'm fascinated by the paranormal.
Absolutely. And you know, Dale, I 100% agree with you. I am also very much a skeptic. I came into being a paranormal investigator as an atheist, someone who had no spiritual beliefs or these things. But, you know, due to my dad's story, of course, it basically changed me into someone who's a little more open-minded. And for somebody who's documented so many ghosts and fairies and, shall we say, fabulous beasties. I remember you saying that a few times.
Yeah.
For somebody who's documented a lot of that. You know, what do you feel in your heart might be one of the few things in the paranormal that might actually be real?
You know, the most common type of ghost story that I get from Newfoundlanders are what people here would call a token story. And a token story is someone gets a premonition of someone's death, or they have something strange happen at the moment that it happens. So, you know, if someone were to die at a distance, then a family member or a friend would have an experience at that moment and know that that person had kind of passed on. That's the kind of story that I hear most often. It's one of the most common types of hauntings that I hear. And so that makes me very curious when that is so common an experience to have. And I think that, you know, our perception and understanding of the universe is so flawed in some ways. It's so imperfect that maybe there's something to all this. Maybe there are kind of energies that connect us as people. So I'm really interested in that. I'm also really interested in kind of anniversary type hauntings where things happen on the same date year after year on the day that it may have happened, like a murder or a shipwreck or something like that.
Yes, what they would call a residual haunting, something that repeats itself sometimes every day, sometimes once a month, sometimes once every couple of years. I remember hearing the story about the Vikings of Lonesome Meadows.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's other Viking stories. There's Viking stories from the south coast of the island, too. And I kind of wonder about that. And I've heard several theories about that. Maybe what we are experiencing there is not so much a ghost or an apparition or the soul of someone. Certainly when we think of ships, ghost ships, it's not something that had a living soul. Maybe what we are experiencing in those types of hauntings is actually time kind of replaying itself somehow, like a little hiccup in time, or time is kind of reversed or is playing over itself in some way. And I think those types of things, you know, have a great deal of fascination for me. So there might be a scientific explanation that we just don't know yet. But those types of hauntings or apparitions or anniversary residual hauntings, I'm really fascinated by.
Well, Dale, we like to think on the subject of technology, maybe not being caught up with what's actually going on with the paranormal. You know, if me and you went back in time 100 years with our cell phones, they'd call us witches.
Yeah, it would be absolutely magical.
Here we are playing Candy Crush, and they'd be trying to burn us at the stake.
Yeah.
You know, it's a pretty interesting thing. You know, a lot of folklore in Newfoundland really is about Newfoundland. There's so many things tied to our wonderful rock, so to speak. I gotta ask you, man, what's your favorite Newfoundland ghost story?
Ah, that is a very good question. So, I mean, I love some of the more, legendary stories. Like, there's a story that I tell on the Haunted Hike that I love telling, and it's one of the oldest ones in St. John's, but a headless captain.
Oh, please tell us this story. This sounds awesome already, dude. I'm shaking in my boots. I'm sure my listeners are too. Go ahead, give it to us.
It's a fabulous story about a man who had rented a house, which at that point was at the very edge of the city. Today, it's right close to downtown, but in the day, in the 1700s, it was pretty much at the edge of what was then civilized. And he had strange things happening in the house. He would hear knocking at the door, and when he would open the door, there'd be no one there. And one night when he was coming home from a party, his friend had driven him home in his horse and carriage, and the horse stopped. And this is something that happens in a lot of paranormal stories, that animals are somehow more sensitive to things than we humans are. Anyway, the horse stopped. Mm-hmm. And so this gentleman said, I'll just walk the rest of the way. Walked out towards his house along this tree-covered lane. And when he got close, there was a figure standing there in front of his house. And the figure slowly turned to face the man. And the man saw that it was the figure of a gentleman, a very tall man with his head cut completely off just above the shoulders. Then he raced away from it as fast as he could. Burst into a boarding house, and he begged for shelter there for the night. And when he told his story, the people that ran the boarding house, they told him that the house that he lived in now was a home that had been owned by a beautiful lady who had had a companion, a captain, an English seagoing captain who had sailed between England and Newfoundland. And when he was in St. John's, he and the lady were always together. But while the captain was away at sea, this lady had a second lover, and this jealous lover determined that he would do away with the captain. And he hid, and he waited until one night when the captain had just said, you know, good night to his loved one, had stepped back onto the pathway. And the lover leapt forward with an exceptionally sharp sword and severed the captain's head from his shoulders. And this was in the era before there was a police force in Newfoundland. And so the culprit was never brought to justice. And people say that the soul of the captain still haunts that location forever in search of his unpunished murderer. And that's one of the oldest recorded ghost stories that we have for St. John's. That dates back to 1745. We have a long history of ghost stories. That's one of my favorites. It's kind of there's a good bit of drama and jilted lovers and whatnot in it. So I like that one.
Oh, man. And I love it when you tell it, Dale. You know, it's pretty endearing to have that story told. I've actually heard that story already from you, but I'm sure a lot of people out there haven't tonight, and they may be thinking twice when they hear the sound coming from Signal Hill.
Yeah.
Okay, my friend. Now, you know, I happen to have seen you quite a few times in different parades around town. And, you know, one really struck me, of course, is the Hobby Horse Parade. Or, you know, I've seen you actually do that. Tell us about your hobby horse hobby. I mean, a lot of people out there have no idea what a hobby horse is. And why don't you take it away and let people know about this hobby of yours?
I think when people hear the phrase hobby horse, they think of the children's toy. You know, that the children's toys are the little horses with the little horse's head and a stick with maybe the wheel at the end, and the kids kind of ride it around. The Newfoundland tradition of the hobby horse is very, very different. It's an older tradition, and the hobby horse is the head of a horse, like the size of a horse's head. So it's a much, much larger puppet with a jaw that will kind of open and close and snock shut. It'll make this kind of clapping noise as it comes together. And then there'll be a big cape or sheet or piece of canvas that will hang down from it. A person or two people or three people can get underneath this sheet. And they would go around at Christmas time. We have this tradition of what's called here mummering, which is a disguise tradition during the 12 days of Christmas that people would go from door to door, house to house, and it was kind of a guessing game. You would show up in disguise and your neighbors would try and guess who you were. And the hobby horse was always the last figure to kind of enter into the house, and no one wanted to let the hobby horse in because it was this element of chaos. It would come in and it would, you know, get the dog all riled up, and it would, you know, grab the tablecloth and pull it from the table. I read one story about a hobby horse going in and stealing the pot of soup off the stove and leaving with it. So this was an old tradition that dated back. The first hobby horse that was here in the province that we know of was in the 1500s. Sir Humphrey Gilbert brought a hobby horse with him to Newfoundland from England. When we started the Mummers Festival in 2009, there were very few of these things left. There were maybe five or six in private hands or at the museum, the provincial museum, or in archives. So we started a program to teach people how to make these things again. And we kind of, old-time hobby horses were made out of wood. The really old ones were actually made out of the skull of a horse. That's a hard thing to teach in an afternoon workshop. So we developed a template to make it out of cardboard. And so now they're cardboard and they're covered with fabric, and they have a wooden pieces in the jaws with nails that kind of can make that noise when they clap together. So we've taught hundreds of people how to make these hobby horses, which were once a part of the Newfoundland Christmas tradition.
Wow. Well, enough horsing around, my friend. Tell me about any other projects you may have on the horizon. You know, I always know that the Haunted Hike is going to be just around the corner again, once it gets a bit warmer out. When is your Haunted Hike resuming?
The Haunted Hike runs during the summer months, so it runs from June until mid-September, usually.
You hear that out there, all you tourists? You hear that out there, tourists? If you're in St. John's, please drop by the Haunted Hike. Let me tell you, every time I've gone four times, actually, Dale, over the years. And it's always fun, and there's always something new. You guys change it every year a little bit, hey?
We change it a little bit, and we actually have two different tour routes now. So if you come on Sunday or Monday night, it's a completely different tour than it is from Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. And for the past couple of years, we've been working with Parks Canada at Signal Hill National Historic Site to run a program called Ghosts of Signal Hill, which is all ghost stories on the hill. It's not so much a walking tour as it is kind of a sit-down ghost storytelling session. And it's all done in character of a soldier who would have fought on the hill in the 1760s. So that's been a great fun new project for us as well.
And I can't help but associate the word heritage with Mr. Dale Jarvis, especially with all the historic landmarks here in Newfoundland. And one place that's very near and dear to my heart as a paranormal investigator, a place that I've actually investigated 20 times over the last 2 years. I've clocked almost 1,000 hours of investigating time and of review time for my recorders. As an EVP researcher, my favorite place to go is Cape Spear.
Mm-hmm.
Dale, can you tell me a ghost story of the Cape Spear that might be linked to some of the madness that I've captured down there over the last few years?
You know, it's one of these places that keeps coming up time and time again. And for listeners who are unfamiliar with the site, it's the easternmost point of North America. So there's a very old lighthouse there. The lighthouse itself, I have heard from some of the parks interpreters that work there that they have had strange things happen. They've heard footsteps and whatnot happen in that building. That's the old part of the hill. But then kind of closer to the water, there are World War II gun emplacements and bunkers. And that's also an area where lots of people have had strange, strange things happen. So there are probably two different types of areas there where strange activities have been reported. The lighthouse itself, which is kind of the more historic spot. But then this Second World War site, which is a creepy spot, as you know, to kind of go through in the darkness of night. Perfect spot for ghost hunting.
Absolutely, Dale. In fact, I recommend it highly to anybody out there. 20 times down in those bunkers by yourself at night, I must be either half insane or completely desensitized from reading your books. Dale, of course, as we draw close to the end here, can you tell us a little bit about this new book, Any Mummers Allowed In? Christmas Mummering Traditions in Newfoundland and Labrador. You know, a lot of people out there don't really know that in Newfoundland, we kind of have a Halloween tradition on Christmas.
Yeah.
We get to dress up and have a bit of fun. So tell us all about it. Tell us about this book and what people can expect when they hopefully purchase it.
A couple generations ago, the dressing up part of Halloween didn't really exist in Newfoundland. That was a tradition that was kind of introduced in recent memory to Newfoundland. But there is this disguise tradition. The word mummer comes from an old kind of Germanic word, basically meaning to disguise yourself or to put on a mask. And people at the kind of the end of the year would enact this centuries-old ritual of disguise and going from door to door. Sometimes in some communities there would be a hobby horse. Sometimes they would do a little play when they came to the house, a play that was about death and rebirth, you know, so which kind of, you know, mimics the end of the year, the death of one year and the birth of a new year. Some aspects of this might be even pre-Christian. You know, some of these are very, very old traditions. In other places in Europe, they have similar kind of year-end traditions. So it's something that has been in Newfoundland for a very long time. Every Newfoundlander can probably tell you a story about someone going out mummering or jannying, as it's known in some communities. I wrote a book about the history of the tradition and kind of looked at all the different ways it plays out in individual communities, because it's not the same in every town. Different places do it in slightly different ways. So I want to kind of talk about the history of that, and that the types of costumes that people would wear. And we've been involved with this, with the Heritage Foundation and the Mummers Festival, and kind of revitalizing this tradition and giving people an opportunity to do it. I had lots of people tell me that once people got carpets in their houses, they didn't like the mummers coming in as much because they'd always track in snow and mud on their boots. But I think really it declined a bit when people just didn't know their neighbors like they used to. People used to live in really tiny communities. You knew everybody, so you didn't worry too much about letting strangers in because you knew that you were probably related to them in some way. Mm-hmm. These days, as we've become more urban, the tradition has shifted a little bit. There was also a time, quite a long period of time in the province, where the practice was actually illegal. There was a murder in Bay Roberts, a community about an hour's drive from St. John's, in the 1860s. And the authorities of the day said, okay, that's it. We're going to ban this tradition. Because it could be associated with a bit of violence and a bit of mischief. People were in disguise. They might have a bit to drink. And at times people would, you know, if they had a grudge against someone, if there was kind of an unfinished business throughout the year, that might be the time of year when you were in disguise and you might, you know, give someone a good knock with a junk of wood or something. So the authorities tried to stamp it out. It didn't quite work the way that they had wanted to. It was such a beloved tradition that it continues on to today. And the paranormal connection is actually that murder case in the 1860s, which took place in the community of Bay Roberts. Bay Roberts is one place that I've come across where there is actually a ghost mummer story. People have reported seeing a phantom mummer kind of wandering the back streets of the community. So maybe it was this man, Isaac Mercer, who was murdered by the mummers those centuries ago.
Oh my goodness, I have a feeling I know where I might be going for my next paranormal investigation.
Yeah, I'll have to let you know exactly where the murder happened. You can go check it out.
I'm going to have to throw my wreath over my head and maybe put a blanket over there too, take my violin out and have myself a Johnny Jig and hopefully get in contact with the dead mummer that may be running around this place. Wow, that's pretty creepy, Dale. Now, Dale, as we draw to a close, of course, first and foremost, do want to thank you so much for being on my show, man.
Oh,
it means
you.
The world to me. I am a true fan of Mr. Jarvis. I'm sure a lot of people out there are as well. Dale, where can people find you, your books?
The easiest way you can find me online. I'm easy to find. You can just find me on Facebook or just Google me. DaleJarvis.ca is my personal website. The Haunted Hike is hauntedhike.com. And if you go to Amazon or Chapters Indigo and any of the online book retailers, you can just type in Dale Jarvis and all the ghost books are there. And the new Any Mummers Loud In book is available online as well. It's published by Flanker Press. So you can also search for Flanker Press and they have a website as well.
I gotta say, Flanker is pretty awesome, and they do publish a lot of the stranger and more odd books, so you definitely found the right fit for you, Mr. Jarvis, definitely. Of course, from me to you, thank you so much, and Merry Christmas to you, Dale.
Merry Christmas.
I know it sounds strange to say that because it's still November, but remember, when I release this, it'll be December month. Guys, get out there, buy Mr. Jarvis's book, Any Mummers Allowed In, Christmas Mummering Traditions in Newfoundland and Labrador. And thank you again, Mr. Jarvis, for being on tonight.
Thanks for having me.
Not a problem, buddy.
And with that, I do say goodbye. I look forward to talking with you once again. From the oldest city in North America, I bid you adieu. from the Odd to Newfoundland Paranormal Podcast.